Today is Tuesday, the 2nd of December, and you are listening to the World Socialist website. The Wang Phuc caught fire in Hong Kong, a crime of global capitalism. Eric Long, December 2, 2025. The official death toll in the catastrophic fire that engulfed seven high-rise residential buildings of Wang Phuc Court in Tai Po, Hong Kong, rose to 151 on Monday. Over 2,000 survivors have lost everything and are now homeless. Hundreds are housed in converted COVID isolation shelters on the runway of the old Kai Tak Airport. 14 people connected to the engineering company and the scaffolding subcontractor carrying out renovation work on the exterior walls at Wang Phuc Court have been arrested on charges of manslaughter in an ongoing investigation into the causes of the fire. Investigators have determined that, among other violations, the contractors used illegal highly flammable netting on the bamboo scaffolding that encased the buildings. The flames spread from the netting to styrofoam boards covering the windows, which acted as an accelerant spreading the fire throughout the building. The homes of thousands had been wrapped in tinder. Over the weekend, an unmistakable but unremarked change swept Hong Kong. The green netting that surrounds every construction and renovation site was being quietly taken down. Bales of the stuff lie on street corners. The skeletons of bamboo scaffolding stand stark throughout much of the city. It is a tacit admission of the ubiquity of the use of substandard and illegal materials and indicates the degree of failure of government oversight and lax enforcement. Wang Phuc Court was covered in approximately 2,300 non-compliant sheets of netting. Each illegal sheet cost about 50 Hong Kong dollars less than a mandatory flame-resistant one. The cost-cutting measures that ravaged the complex and killed over 150 people likely saved 1,500 Hong Kong dollars, about US$2,000, roughly 100 US dollars per incinerated human being. The cindered remains of Wang Phuc Court stand in Tai Po in the New Territories. It was the last of the land carved out from China in the Pearl River Delta by British imperialism. Britain seized Hong Kong through multiple opium wars, demanding at gunpoint that China opened its borders to the poison Britain grew in poppy fields in India, processed in Singapore, and marketed through Canton. Britain handed Hong Kong back to Beijing in 1997, a city shot through with staggering levels of inequality, bearing the imprint of a century and a half of colonial subjugation. The broad democratic impulses that exist in Hong Kong are certainly not a product of British colonial rule, nor its reintegration by the ruling Communist Party of China, the CPC, in Beijing, which implemented modestly expanded direct legislative elections. Rather, they are the legacy of hard-fought battles by the working class, which staged general strikes and mass protest actions in coordination with workers in Guangzhou in the first half of the 20th century. Beijing presides over the reintegration of Hong Kong with the mainland under the mantra, "One country, two systems." Under this rubric, it has preserved the basic law drawn up with Britain, maintaining a certain political autonomy for the special administrative region. The fundamental concern for Beijing is that Hong Kong continued to serve as a connecting point for the free flow of international finance capital. All other considerations are subordinate to this. What Beijing fears most of all is a social contamination of unrest spilling across the border. The Greater Bay Area of the Pearl River Delta, from the mainland of Shenzhen and Guangzhou to the islands of Macau and down the Kowloon Peninsula to Hong Kong, is a single economic unit. The spark of working class resistance at any point could spread the conflagration of revolution throughout southern China. Amid widespread shock and anger over the fire, the Office for Safeguarding National Security in Hong Kong has warned that anyone, quote, attempting to use the victims' grief to advance their political ambitions, end of quote, would be arrested and punished by law. Chinese authorities are well aware that anger over the unnecessary loss of life in Hong Kong will resonate with working people in China who have suffered tragic loss of life in apartment, factory and hospital fires as a consequence of lax safety measures and the cost-cutting of developers and builders. While the horrors of the Wang Fuk Court fire are cloaked in the particularities of bamboo scaffolding and green netting, it is not only a Hong Kong event. The inferno in Tai Po is a local eruption of a global crisis around capitalism, which is producing catastrophe upon catastrophe for the working class. The most obvious and striking parallel is that of the Grenfell Tower fire in London, the 2017 conflagration that incinerated 72 people. The green netting of Wang Fuk and the flammable cladding of the Grenfell encased working-class housing, the cramped homes of the expendable. Engels, writing The Conditions of the Working Class in England in 1845, coined the phrase, quote, social murder, for the process whereby capitalism placed hundreds and thousands of workers in conditions that led to their too early and unnatural death. It is precisely apt. The catastrophes of Wang Fuk Court and Grenfell are spectacular eruptions of the miserable and entirely preventable world housing crisis. They are not mere excesses, not failures of regulation. They are an inescapable part of capitalism. For capitalism, what is an act of murder is at the same time a routine cost of doing business. A mass death toll is intrinsic to the functioning of the system. Cost-cutting, assembly line speed-ups, real estate swindles, and mass evictions, capitalism is driven to these measures by its own inherent logic of competition and profit-making. The capitalist who will not employ these measures will be displaced by one who will, and the stock exchange will rise. The social character of the capitalist class, bred bone deep by this competition, bears the indifference and rapacity of over two centuries of global exploitation. Around the globe, those that construct and tend the glittering excesses of finance, in Hong Kong, the bank towers of Central and the mansions of the Peak, these workers live in hovels, in cages. They gather for the family dinner in homes surrounded by flammable netting. Capitalism has urbanized the world, but in a grotesquely unequal and irrational manner. Around 300 human beings, fathers, grandmothers, infant children, migrant workers, were incinerated in their homes at Grenfell and Wang Fuk Court. How many millions more die of disease in the squalor of shanty towns and slums of the world? The threadbare possessions of evicted tenants are thrown into the streets in America under the watchful eye of the police. Even in its centres of concentrated wealth, capitalism routinely cannot provide homes with potable water or factory workplaces safe from maiming and death. The infrastructure for flood control in countries subject to the ravages of typhoons, the Philippines, Sri Lanka, Vietnam, is criminally underdeveloped and ill-maintained, and thousands of working people die each year as floods engulf their homes. All is subject to the profit motive. There is no other governing principle under capitalism. Human lives must not be measured by its metrics. The social murder of Wang Fuk Court cries out for the overthrow of capitalism and its replacement throughout the world by socialism, a system that measures rational economy by human need and that shelters everyone in dignity, comfort, and safety. UN says Israel has, quote, a de facto state policy of organized torture. Jean Shule, December 1, 2025. The United Nations Committee on Torture has said that Israel has, quote, a de facto state policy of organized and widespread torture and ill treatment that has gravely intensified since October 7, 2023. It expressed, quote, deep concern over allegations of repeated severe beatings, dog attacks, electrocution, waterboarding, use of prolonged stress positions, and sexual violence, end quote, as well as the impunity of Israeli security forces for war crimes. The report published Friday, alongside reports on Albania, Argentina, and Bahrain, was part of the committee's regular monitoring of countries that have signed the UN Convention Against Torture. It covered the last 2 years since the start of the Gaza genocide. The UN's Committee of 10 Independent Experts expressed its concern about the disproportionate nature of Israel's response to the October 7 attacks that have resulted in 70,000 deaths, the destruction of or damage to much of Gaza's infrastructure and buildings, and the displacement of 90% of the population. It said Palestinian detainees were humiliated by, quote, being made to act like animals or being urinated on, end of quote, were systematically denied medical care and subject to excessive use of restraints, in some cases resulting in amputation. It noted that Israel lacked a distinct offence criminalising torture and that its legislation exempts public officials from criminal culpability under the, quote, necessity defence when unlawful physical pressure is applied during interrogations. It drew attention to, quote, the high proportion of children who are currently detained without charge or on remand, end of quote, noting the age of criminal responsibility imposed by Israel is 12, and that children younger than 12 have also been detained. Children categorized as security prisoners, quote, have severe restrictions on family contact, may be held in solitary confinement, and do not have access to education, in violation of international standards, end of quote. It states, the UN committee appealed to Israel to amend its legislation so that solitary confinement is not used against children. The UN report adds to the mounting evidence produced by Israeli and Palestinian human rights and legal advocacy groups of the torture, abuse and neglect in Israel's detention centres, operated by the Israeli Defence Forces, the IDF, and the Israel Prison Service, the IPS. Israel's Channel 14 aired a programme showing an Israeli prison officer describing the abuse, while testimony of the abuse and torture have been widely disseminated on social media, accompanied by the photos and videos shot by Israeli soldiers and former detainees. The report headed Death Sentence for Palestinians in Custody, New Report and Testimonies, published recently by the Physicians for Human Rights, Israel, PHRI, says that at least 98 Palestinians have died in Israeli detention centres since October 7, 2023, with evidence pointing in many cases to torture, starvation or medical neglect. Since hundreds of Palestinians detained in Gaza are missing, the real toll is likely to be substantially higher. Fewer than 30 prisoners died in Israeli custody in the 10 years before the war. These large numbers and the fact that they occurred across at least 12 detention centres, those of both the Israel Prison Service, the IPS, and the Israel Defence Forces, the IDF, indicate that they are not isolated incidents or the result of a few bad apples, but flowed from a deliberate policy of killing Palestinians in custody. The PHRI report tracked deaths from causes including physical violence, medical neglect, the lack of treatment for severe infections and malnutrition, using freedom of information requests, forensic reports and interviews with lawyers, activists, relatives and witnesses. It provides evidence of the severe abuse meted out by the Israeli security forces to Palestinian detainees. The emaciated appearance of the 1,726 detainees who were recently released and returned to Gaza made plain the suffering they had endured. They described the shocking mistreatment they had received, including being deprived of food, water and sleep, denied medication and treatment, allowed access to the toilet just once a day, shackling in painful positions, suffocation, sexual assault, rape, beatings, abuse and torture that resulted in some cases in permanent injury and even blindness. Verbal, physical and psychological torture and humiliation were routine. The PHRI report provides chilling details of the physical abuse and medical neglect suffered by prisoners, including personal testimonies from prison staff who spoke of such severe shackling of prisoners, causing such severe wounds to their arms and legs that their limbs had to be amputated. Other cases point to a systematic pattern of severe violence, including head trauma, internal hemorrhages, and broken ribs. The UN committee found the death toll in Israeli custody to be, quote, abnormally high and appears to have exclusively affected the Palestinian detainee population, and noted that, quote, to date, no state officials have been held responsible or accountable for such deaths, end of quote. It drew attention to Israel's widespread use of the, quote, unlawful combatants law to justify the prolonged detention without trial of thousands of Palestinian men, women and children. This law allows Israel to imprison people indefinitely without charge or trial during wartime without recognizing them as prisoners of war as mandated by the Geneva Convention. If there are, quote, reasonable grounds to believe that they participated in, quote, hostile activities against the State of Israel, end of quote, or that they are a member of a group that has done so. Detainees can be denied access to a lawyer for up to 75 days, while the courts routinely extend their detention based on, quote, secret evidence. According to the Israeli human rights group HaMoked, the prison service is holding about 2,660 Gazans as, quote, unlawful combatants, the highest number since the start of the war, while legal rights groups believe hundreds more are being held in military detention centres before being transferred to IPS prisons. The law means that hundreds, if not thousands, of Palestinians have been forcibly disappeared and held without external oversight. Yet data obtained in May from the IDF's Military Intelligence Directorate showed that Israel had arrested only 1,450 Palestinians from the military wings of Hamas and Palestinian Islamic Jihad, the PIJ. Of the 47,653 Palestinians, it considers to be Hamas or PIJ militants. This means that the overwhelming majority of the 10,000 or so Palestinians held in prisons and the thousands more held in military detention centres are civilians who are not members of either group. Human rights groups and Israeli soldiers have testified to an even smaller ratio of fighters to civilians among those detained in Gaza than the numbers leaked from IDF sources. Michael Spad, one of Israel's leading human rights lawyers, explained that international law only permits the internment of civilians if they pose an imperative security threat, while at the same time guaranteeing basic rights which Israel is violating. He said, quote, "The conditions of Gazans in detention in Israel absolutely without doubt do not meet what is stipulated in the Fourth Geneva Convention," end of quote. Noting that violent abuse, food deprivation, and the denial of Red Cross visits and family communication is routine, he added that the legislation used to hold them is also itself, quote, "a flagrant violation of international law," end of quote. These numbers flatly contradict the IPS's claims, without citing any evidence, that almost all the, quote, "unlawful combatants" held in Israeli prisons are members of Hamas or PIJ, as well as those of Israeli politicians, the IDF and the media that routinely brand all Palestinian detainees from Gaza as, quote, "terrorists." As Tal Steiner, director of the Public Committee Against Torture in Israel, said, the fact that most are not members of militant groups, quote, "undermines the entire justification for their detention," end of quote. Israel is responsible for the deaths of dozens of Palestinian civilians in custody as a result of the atrocious conditions in its detention centres. The Palestinian Prisoners Club said that Palestinian prisoners are exposed to, quote, "slow death through systematic deterioration of inhumane living conditions, medical crimes and torture," end of quote, and pointed to the medical neglect of Palestinian prisoners. This pattern of abuse is a deliberate strategy designed to terrorize the Palestinians and demonstrate the futility of resistance. Itamar Ben-Gvir, the right-wing national security minister, declared that one of his top priorities was to, quote, "worsen conditions for Palestinian prisoners, including by providing only minimal food and to reduce their rights to the minimum required by law." In June 2024, Roen Bar, who headed Israel's domestic spy agency, Shin Bet, warned Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu of the overcrowding in the prisons that were holding 21,000 people, 50% more than their maximum 14,500 capacity, with the treatment of prisoners, quote, "bordering on abuse, exposing state employees to possible criminal proceedings abroad." While the IDF claims that it investigates all allegations of abuse, its top lawyer has brought no prosecutions against soldiers for killing civilians. This is even after high-profile attacks that have prompted international outrage and were clearly in breach of international humanitarian law, including the killing of hundreds of medical and healthcare workers and 562 aid workers, not to mention tens of thousands of Palestinian civilians. Only one Israeli soldier has been prosecuted and convicted, receiving a 7-month sentence for assaulting detainees from Gaza. 5 other soldiers have been charged with aggravated abuse and causing serious bodily harm to a detainee at the Saeed Tyman Detention Center, downgraded from initial allegations of rape after footage of soldiers raping a blindfolded Palestinian detainee and causing serious injuries was leaked to the Israeli media last year. This is a deliberate policy. Last month there was an uproar after Major General Yifat Tomer Yerushalmi, the IDF's top lawyer, revealed that it was she who leaked the infamous video. She became the target of a right-wing campaign of vilification, arrest and possible prosecution that had already mobilized in defense of the IDF criminals. That the Arab regimes, along with the Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas and Fatah's Central Committee, have remained silent about Israel's abuse and torture of prisoners, testifies to their perfidy and collusion with Israel in suppressing the Palestinians. The silence of world leaders and the corporate media about Israel's abuse and torture of Palestinian prisoners, in confirmation of their complicity in Israel's genocidal assault on Gaza and its escalating attacks on the West Bank. Israel enjoys the support of all the imperialist powers that are now themselves slashing democratic rights and freedom of speech to suppress all opposition to their domestic and foreign policies. As far as they too are concerned, international humanitarian law and the Geneva Convention drawn up in the aftermath of World War II are a dead letter. For these articles and more, go to the World Socialist website, wsws.org. For the World Socialist website, this has been Carol Diviak.
The World Socialist website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.